Greetings, travelers. I'm Josh.
And I'm Kai.
And we're the Genshin Guys. Welcome all. This podcast is for fans of Genshin Impact, a mobile game made by HoYoverse, also known as miHoYo. Here we talk about our opinions, experiences, and dreams about Genshin Impact. If you like our show, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. All right, before we get started, Kahi, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling very democratic, very liberated today. Lots of democracy and lots of liberty to dispense onto the enemies of the Super Earth. How are you?
Yes, all the Helldivers 2 references.
I've been addicted so far. I love this game. Finally unlocked the mech. Did you unlock the mech or no?
I just did, right before we started recording, actually.
Oh, it's so fun. I wish you could load it up again. But anyways, we have a lot of other non-Helldiver stuff to talk about. We are going to be talking about Genshin, as is the theme of this podcast.
Yeah, but how was your week?
My week was definitely full of a lot of other games. My week was pretty, I want to say hectic, but just a lot of stuff. There's not a lot of downtime, especially at work. When I come home, there's a long list of things that I get to do or want to do. So yeah, a lot of things to look forward to. What about you? Anything you're looking forward to?
Looking forward to, I've been playing a bunch of different games too. I've been playing a lot of Tekken, been playing Helldivers, I've been playing Granblue. Just really excited for upcoming content in a lot of these games that I play. I have been playing a lot more Genshin, which is super great. I feel I've been disconnected from Genshin for a little bit, but I'm starting to finally get back in streaming. We're doing co-op and stuff. But, I am trying to make time for other games and stuff as well. One thing that I just randomly decided to do is I want to watch the anime Mashiru because I haven't seen it yet.
It's pretty funny.
But
I do like the comedic moments in it.
But the theme song is everywhere, right? It's just brim bum bum brim bum bum brim bum bum boom, right?
And catchy.
I want to learn all of the lyrics to this song. Because I speak Japanese, I like rap, it's just a really fun song, and the beat is really interesting, so I'm personal challenge to myself is to learn this song within the next couple weeks and be able to do it at karaoke on demand basically. So that's just one random thing that I decided to do this week. I'm also starting a new job next week, so I am quite excited for that. More details on that to come, maybe. It is a big step forward. I've been kind of going through the motions in life right now, so this is a really good thing for me, and I'm really excited to be able to start focusing on the podcast again once I've got the rest of my stuff sorted out. So anyway, that's basically how it's been for us. So let's introduce today's topics, which are our weeks in Genshin, Genshin news. We're going to talk about the cooking event, Receiver of Friends from Afar. We're going to talk about the Hillitrill event, Journey through the Hillenigmatic Terrain. And then we're going to do a lore learn-along today for Hillitrills. We're going to talk about Hillitrills. It's on the topic right now because of the event, and we'll connect those two things later. We're going to talk about the community discussion question, of course, and then we're going to talk about we're going to do our one last wish for the episode. So, before we get started, shout-outs. So, Discord shout-out. Join the Discord if you haven't already. We're going to be doing a bunch of fun events in there as well. I'm going to be announcing a voice acting-related event for fun. For anyone that's interested in trying out voice acting in the server, we're going to be doing something in there. We're going to be doing... I do an LA meetup group in Los Angeles. So, if you're in Southern California, feel free to come join. The meetup group is in the description below, in the link. Is there... Sorry, I don't know what I'm doing. Support the podcast. Supporting the podcast, if you have the means to, would be really, really helpful for us. It really helps us to, justify putting all the time that we do into making the podcast and all the projects we want to do for the community going forward. So if you are able to, use the Ko-fi link in the description and, support us however you can. That'd be great, but not totally necessary. So let's get started with our first topic, our weeks in Genshin.
Boken da boken!
Okay, Kai, how was your week in Genshin Impact?
So still working on doing some character talent level ups. I have finally I've ascended Yao Yao, because she's been kind of lagging behind for my my Pokemon team.
Ascended her to 80?
She's 90? Right now only an 80. I don't think I need to get her to 90. She's not really like a main DPS. She's like a healer support. But I just wanted to make sure that she's like her skills are leveled up enough where the Dendro does a lot more damage than it's supposed to and heal. I gave her the, what is it? The beacon of, not the beacon of the Red Sea, the staff. What is Sino's staff called? Let me check again. I've been leveling
staff
her.
Staff of the Scarlet Sands.
Scarlet Sands, that's the one. So I've been leveling her up with that because her skill does pretty consistent damage and it heals, but this one I need her mastery and it kind of matches her aesthetically. Like the color palette is nice. Sadly, she's the only character that really benefits from this staff that I don't have better staffs for on other characters.
Oh, so interesting.
But yeah, I've been leveling up some old characters because all of my like 90 characters are already really powerful. Like I have Yelan, which is like triple crown. I have Raiden Shogun triple crown. I got Jian Yun, who is like almost like 9 and 10 for like their skill and burst. So I'm really trying to make sure all of my other characters are like in line. I used to do this like way back in the day, just make sure all of my older characters are still at like a competitive level for any kind of team compositions I want to try out later. So just looking back and leveling them up. But yeah, I'm just doing some character leveling. It's mid-season where there's not really much to do other than make sure everyone is up to date. Anything you're working on? Any characters you're working on?
Oh my god, so much. So I've been working, like I said, I've been reconnecting with Genshin, kind of reevaluating where I want to level up characters. I said a couple weeks ago that I wanted to make like a list of like what characters I need to level up, but it's kind of just been going depending on what day I'm on and you know, who I feel like leveling up that day. I think it's easier for me to do it that way, so I'll just like pick a character that day who I feel like leveling, and then I'll just hone in on them. And usually they're characters that have to do with like some kind of team I want to build. But I'm really focused on hyper leveling my NA account. So I spent like a bunch of the resin moon things, original resins. And I was playing co-op. I'm gonna need to like do a lot more co-op of just running around the world and taking down enemies because I need materials. And it's fun to do that with other people. You can do that with people and they can get materials too. You can do it in other people's worlds. So that's like the endless part of Genshin that you can always do for fun. Which is like, someone was asking this in a stream the other day, like, you know, what is there to do in Genshin? It was a different person's stream. It was a different game. And they were like, oh, I kind of want to stream Genshin, but like, what is there to do in Genshin and Honkai Star Rail after you pretty much clear everything? And I'm like, well, in Honkai Star Rail, there's nothing. There's just, you know, once you beat the hardest content, you just wait until it refreshes. But in Genshin, maybe if you've explored everything, that's one thing. But if you finished all the story events, you can run around the world, explore, take down enemies for materials. You know, you can try out different teams. You can just like kind of have fun with friends. It's like a chill, just chatting, but also like, you know, doing something at the same time. So that part's really fun. I have been focusing on leveling my NA account because I want to play with more people on NA. And I've decided that like I'm going to split my accounts. So like I usually have all the characters on my Asia account. Now I'm going to start splitting them between Asia and NA. And on my NA account, I'm planning on pulling Chiori. So what I've been working on is a team for Chiori. So I have Goro, who's C4. And I have Yunjin, who I think is also C4. And then, so that's like two of the Geo supports that go with her. And then I'm working on like a fourth character that would just like be the supplementary character. I haven't really decided who exactly that I want to be yet, but no, I don't want it to be all Geo. It needs to be a reaction element, right?
No, it has to be all Geo. So, I don't think you understand. It has to be all Geo. That's the only way to play Geo.
No, okay, look, I tried Noelle the other day and unless she's C6, like, even if she was C6, I tried her on my account, like for Spiral Abyss, someone challenged me to do it. So I built the whole team around her. I spent resin on it and I mean, she's just, I don't have her leveled enough, and it honestly feels like kind of slow, like, and clunky, like to be a DPS Noelle. And so I have to wait until I get her to like level 90 to like really feel it, I guess. But I was like not really interested in doing it. Like, I'm not really interested in like being a Claymore character and just using the Claymore, like, and just slowly smacking the enemy like that. It takes too long for me, and Noelle's whole playstyle is like kind of about that. So if I do something like, maybe if I combine her with Shen Yun and I like dive jump attack with her, maybe that could be fun. Now that I think about it.
Do you have like C6 Yunjin?
I have C60 in general.
Okay, because she increases attack speed, and on Noelle, it's great.
I know. It's awesome. Yeah, I did that.
I love that team.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's okay. But for Chiori, to focus on Chiori doing as much damage as possible and becoming one of the top carries in my NA account, I wanted to build a team around her. So I've been spending a lot of resources leveling up Goro and Yunjin, and kind of preparing for Chiori as much as possible. I don't even know how to do that really, but she's coming out soon, so I'm gonna just do as much as I can and hope that it ends up working out. So yeah, I've been focusing on preparing for Chiori basically, and just buffing my account overall so that I have an easier time doing stuff, because I still have trouble clearing, like, I only have one level 90. It's Risley. Like, I have trouble clearing content by myself in a reasonable amount of time. It takes me too long, so trying to do what I can. But yeah, it's been fun. I've been really enjoying it. Genshin is super fun right now for me, and I'm excited for the new update. Okay, so let's move on to Genshin news. Okay, so in Genshin news, birthdays, as always, we had Chi-Chi on March 2nd, Yao Yao on March 5th, and there's, in other news, there's also pop-up stores in Berlin with merchandise in Germany, so for those of you that are in Germany and near Berlin, go check it out. Information's on the Twitter. Then there's the Genshin Impact X Discovery, like, crossover collaboration for the nature benefits thing. They have two things going on right now. So if you check it out on the Twitter or on the X, the Teyvat Nature Discovery Tour is a real world locations sites. They're going to be in France and Italy and United Kingdom and Germany. So across Europe. Definitely check those out if you live nearby. All the information is on their Twitter. And then there's the Nature Benefit Collaboration spokesperson teaser, where they have five characters. You have to guess who they are based off the silhouette, and then repost it, and you have a chance to win some merch. So do that ASAP, if it's not already done by the time you listen to this. But it is it's a fun little, you know, thing that they're doing. So check it out. We'll find, I'm sure we'll find out more about what this is and how it plays into the community later. But this is a thing. Okay, so one of the other things I want to mention is our mod Solido, actually, in the Discord, brought up that China was looking for more engineers to help with community-generated content, user-generated content. And this basically means, like, things like Divine Ingenuity, right? Or things where we create stuff like the teapot. They're looking for people to help with that more. So it looks like they're really gearing up to give us more things to do in game that are of that nature. So I'm really praying for Divine Ingenuity, because for those of you that have been around long enough, you know that I love Divine Ingenuity and that it was like one of my favorite experiences in Genshin so far. And if it comes back in a permanent way, I will be on that all the time. But if you don't know what it is yet, it's just like more ways to enjoy Genshin. You know, once you've done everything, there's like more customization, more fun, kind of like the teapot. So yeah, stay tuned for that. We haven't heard anything in the English side yet, but it was posted on their Chinese website. So you know, that's all we know. Now, the other thing that was posted on Genshin's Twitter this week was the marketing for Chiori. So we have you know, we got some of her like weapon or her ability descriptions. We did get her weapon descriptions as well. We got her weapon and then the like the magic looking, the like magic staff looking pole arm as well. So Kahi, would you be able to like go through those and just kind of read what the descriptions are?
Okay, so let's start off with the 5-star sword. So obviously it looks just like it's meant for Chiori. Really nice golden sword look, golden metal with that, you know, signature red flower at the near the hilt. So it's called the,
and what's it called?
It's called the Uraku Misugiri. Uraku Misugiri. So the main stat is crit damage all the way up to 88% when it's maxed out at level 90, refinement rank 1. Base attack 542, really good stats. And its focus is on normal attack. So normal attack damage is increased by 16%. Elemental skill damage is increased by 24%. After a nearby active character deals geo damage, the aforementioned effects increase by 100% for 15 seconds. Additionally, the wielder's defense is increased by 20%. So obviously geo focus. However, even if they don't have, you know, geo damage, it's still good for its base stats, as well as, you know, normal attack and elemental skill increase. So anyone who can use a sword can benefit from this. Whether it's going to be specifically for Chiori, I don't think it looks like it is specifically meant for her. But yeah, it gains a benefit when you're on a team with other Geo characters. So that looks really, really cool.
I mean, it does look like it's specifically meant for her.
Well, it looks like it, yeah, like, because it's Geo. But anyone who uses a sword and uses normal attacks is, you know, they can benefit from this. But there's more benefits to Chiori specifically. Yeah. But anyone who needs crit damage, they're probably going to have a good time too.
Well, the thing is, like, yes, like, a normal attack damage increased by 16% and skill damage increased by 24% is okay. But, like, that's half of the description. The other half is 20% increase in defense, which is useless to many characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then the geo damage doubles that bonus. The doubles the attack damage bonus and skill damage bonus. So I think there's actually 4 star weapons, like Festering Desire you can't really get anymore, but like there's other weapons that are probably going to be better for characters that aren't Geo.
Mm-hmm.
The only person I could see this even working on right now in a niche team would be like Albedo.
All right, they mentioned that in the live stream.
His skill damage would go up and then he has normal attack damage, exactly. So, and he doesn't really have like a proper 5-star weapon, so I feel like it would be good for them, but I don't think it would even be worth it on anyone else except for just being a stat stick, but that's it.
Well,
does that make sense?
Well, the thing is, I know this is going to be pretty rare, but in co-op it does say if a nearby active character deals geo damage, so if you're open world you can still gain the benefit if someone else is geo.
I see, it
is not like specifically like one a weapon that comes to mind that I kind of feel like is specifically for that character is Yaimiko's weapon, because you specifically have to use your skill 3 times to get to proc the effect. No one else can really
do that. It's not good on anyone. I tried it. I tried it on so many people. The effect is really written weird to make it like really not understandable. I had to like look up a YouTube video. I have 2 of Yaimiko's weapon on my NA account, and I don't have Yaimiko, so I can't really use it with anybody.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So yeah, there are weapons that are very specific. This one doesn't seem too specific, so there's some breathing room so you can try it on other characters. But yeah, overall, it's pretty good.
If a nearby active character deals geo damage means co-op, or if it means like, can I be Noelle and then hit someone with my skill and then switch to this character and they'll get the increase, or no?
No, nearby active character. So they have to be on the field during this thing. So if you switch, they're not the
active. So both characters have to be on the field.
Yeah.
I got it. Interesting. Right. Well, we'll see how it turns out. It could also just be a weirdly written description, which happens sometimes.
But we also have another one. We have the staff, but it's called Pole Arm. It kind of looks like a healing staff to me. Because the HP stat, this one is called the Dialogues of the Desert Sages. So this is from the new event where you mix potions with Lisa and you have like a little stall that you have to manage. Main stat is HP, so at refinement rank 1, level 90, HP goes up 41%. Base attack 510. Interesting amount of attack for HP staff. Principle of Equilibrium, that's the main stat, or the main effect is when the wielder performs healing, restore 8 energy. Now the 8 energy is, you know, highlighted in the color, so that means with more refinements, that'll go up a couple extra points. The effect can be triggered once every 10 seconds, and of course can occur when the character is not on the field. So if you have a character who has a skill that can just be left on the field, a perfect example is Yao Yao, which, you know, she benefits from HP and is a healer.
You're just talking about not having a weapon. Exactly. Perfect.
I might get this, but I still might just keep the other one on Yao Yao, because I do use her for healing, but she's on a team with Kokumi, so Kokumi is a good healer anyways.
Well, you know what's interesting? I think this is the only other HP main stat Pole Arm.
I think you're right.
Until now, Black Tassel has only been the only one. And that's a 3-star weapon. So if this base stat HP goes higher than that, which it should, this could be the new best slot on like Zhongli and maybe Chivalrous and then maybe Yao Yao.
Actually, I just realized Zhongli, when you mentioned that, there is a constellation, I think it's C6, where his shield will heal.
He can heal.
So, I mean, if you have a C6 Zhongli, you don't really need this staff at all, because you have a C6 Zhongli. But
true, still. But like, well, the thing is, like, you know, it's like to power your shield. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, your shield is like Zhongli's whole thing, right? So everything he has, even his like attack, like his pillar attack damage thing that when it pulses, but also his meatball, like the giant meteor that comes out of his ultimate, it scales off HP also. So like this is why like it's overall like just an HP stat weapon is going to be good on him. I feel like this is going to be the new Zhongli thing. So magical girl Zhongli, let's go.
It's gonna be hilarious. What other character uses HP as a stat and heals? Not very many. Chivru's staff.
I mean, healing? A lot do, but not polearm users.
Polearm, HP stat, and healing. Chivru's heals?
Yeah, Chivru's heals, bro.
Is it self?
You know
Yeah, you're right. It's her elemental burst.
No.
Wait.
It's her skill.
I thought her skill was
her skill is she shoots the gun, right? And then she heals.
Wait, you just heal the skill that. Heals? Okay.
Yeah, and so the thing is, like, when you're playing in co-op, if you shoot the gun, it heals everybody. But if it only heals your active character. So in single player, it only heals whoever's out. Like, kind of like Kuki.
Oh, okay.
So actually, her best in slot for support is Black Tassel. So, like, because of the HP substat. Oh, it looks like... Yeah, it looks like there is another... There's a Rightful Reward is another... It's a 4-star HP substat. Weapon, right, but the HP reward. Substat only goes up to 27% max HP bonus when Black Tassel goes up to 46%. Rightful Reward is a polearm.
Is it 4-star?
It's forged. Oh, it's the new. It's the Fontaine.
Oh, the craftable one.
Yeah, and but this one says, so you know what's interesting about the one that the new one? It says when the wielder performs healing, restores 8 energy. It can be triggered once every 10 seconds and can occur even when the character's not on the field. Rightful Reward is when the wielder is healed, restores 8 energy. So it's the same thing. But
it could be a little different, I guess, because
but the thing is, but here's the big kicker. The polearm, this Dialogues of Desert Sages, like it says here, level 90 is 41% HP. Rightful Reward is like 27%.
Eich.
So the stat is the most important thing. Like the HP scaling is the most important. So we're going to start seeing this weapon is going to be... but Black Tassel is still more. Black Tassel is 46% HP.
Well, but it doesn't give any kind of extra energy, which a lot of characters
benefit from. Yeah, yeah. So I think this will be better because, they'll benefit from this. So this is going to be the next...
Keep in mind, the refinement is going to go up, too. So, like, refinement rank 1 is HP 40%.
Yeah, but the refinement only makes the energy go up, not the base, the HP subs. The
true.
HP
so, means that. But, I mean, because it's an event weapon, they're going to give you the refinement material anyways.
True.
This is going to be still...
And the base attack is 510, and the base attack on Black Tassel is 354, so that's a big deal.
So anyways,
I think we're going to see this staff on everybody.
We're going to miss Black Tassel. We barely knew you.
Yeah, I have two of them leveled up. I was like, not to keep switching them. But yeah, dude. Yeah, you should look into the Chivru's healing thing. It's pretty fun. I love Chivru's.
I think it's because I don't have Chivru's.
Oh, that's why. Okay. Yeah, I've been using... I didn't mention this. I forgot. But the other team I built up recently that I've been trying to like level up to being usable in like Spiral Abyss is my like Overlord team with Chivru's. Like my Yoimiya, Chivru's, Fischl, and Beidou team. And it's just like pure overload reaction damage. And so I've been using her and trying to... Her healing's not really great, but it's definitely healing. So it definitely does heal you. And you just got to do it one at a time. Same with Kuki. But at least she doesn't lose health like Kuki does. Because that's that's a whole different thing. But anyway. Yeah, so those are the two weapons that are going to be coming out. Thank you for that, Kahi. And they revealed that information on Twitter recently. So check it out. All right, so that's pretty much it for Genshin news. The new patch is coming quite soon, so we're going to get to see how it is. I'm assuming that the event with the weapon is going to come later in the second half of the patch, but we'll see what happens. And yeah, so let's talk about, I wanted to talk about the cooking event, Receiver of Friends from Afar. Now, this event was super adorable because there was like so many fun interactions between characters that we rarely get to see. Did you play this one in English, Kahi? Like
I played it in English. Yes, I know exactly why you wanted me to play it in English.
Yeah. So, what are some of like your favorite moments from this event?
Honestly, it's the one that I'm pretty sure you're thinking of. I love when the people from Inazuma came in, because they're just trying to like prevent him from eating, like prolonging the whole interaction with a story that makes no sense and made it up. And I actually, like, when they were talking about tofu, the first thing I thought was, wait, isn't tofu like a soybean or something? And then they mentioned it, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. Because yes, Arataki Ito is, for those of you who don't know, he is allergic to beans. That's the one weird lore thing that I remember. I don't know why I remember it so vividly, but it's just funny.
Yeah, we had to throw beans at him, like, as part of the story, which is very sad because, you know, he didn't deserve it, but we didn't know any better. So there's also the part in that part where Ayato goes, sometimes a bro just knows.
A bro just knows.
He's like, and he's like, a bro just knows. Yeah, a bro like just knows.
Like Tiffany or something.
Bros don't suppose, because bros just knows. So I was like, yo, this is my new catchphrase. Bros don't suppose, because bros just character. Knows. Dude, it's so well done. And so, yeah, so that was funny. There was also, my favorite thing is actually, one of my most favorite things is the animations for the traveler when they're cooking.
Actually new, not like, just generic animations.
Yeah, they're like, they actually did animations for this. I really hope they bring those back into the game in like a permanent way. Like either way, like maybe there you can do a long version of cooking or whatever. Maybe there's like more complicated food you can make. And instead of just doing the art, like, you know, the press the button one time thing, once you cook this food the long way 5 times, 10 times, whatever, then you can unlock auto cook for it. But I think it'd be really cool to utilize this animation. So yeah, that part I really liked. And and then just the story with the different characters interacting with each other, super super fun.
They haven't updated the cooking mechanic in a long time, and I don't think they really need to, but honestly, like,
right,
it'll be a nice quality of life improvement because it's been the same since year one.
Yeah, it's nice. Like, I mean, these little mini games that they add in and stuff, it would just be nice to have these options. But, you know, part of the reason, like, you do it, the way they do it is so that, you know, you have a limited time to experience this thingy. But, you know, it seems like it ups the quality of the game when you have these really nice animations, because they don't often make new animations. I think during the Lantern Rite quest, when, like, Gaming hugs his dad, was, like... It was kind of masked. Like a new animation,
or like some of them like, were it was like implied.
They blocked it. Yeah, they blocked it a little bit, but then like you do see him hugging him, and it's like, oh, like they made they made him hug. Like there's a, can we have a hugging emote? Like, you know what I mean? So
or an emote
anyway,
at all?
Yeah, so that any emotes at all, please. Yeah, so that was the Receiver of Friends from Afar event. Super fun. You know, what was your favorite moment? Let us know. Come join the Discord and tell us. So the other event we wanted to talk about is the Hilichurl event, Journey Through Hillenigmatic Terrain. And this event was really fun because it was very chill, and you get to see how the Hilichurls are just like kind of doing their daily life thing. You can see them like training some of the what are they called? Like the pigs, the hogs. And then they're just like kind of running around, chilling, dancing, you know, whatever that they're doing. And you have this like really fun, you know, you just like zap from, you know, you just move from Hilichurl to Hilichurl. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, it's funny, like they showed us like a mechanic at the very beginning of the tutorial that's like, click this thing to like make a smoke appear so that you can block the vision of the Samichurl so you can get past it. But like, I never did that again. I never did that during the whole event.
I guess you don't really need to. It's more like a failsafe.
Yeah, interesting. But yeah, how did you feel about the event?
It was cool. I haven't gotten to complete the whole event, but I know that it lets you, you know, kind of go into the camps and explore. It's more like a lore related event, I guess. It's because it's mostly observation. And I'm sure a lot of people had questions on the Hilichurls, because as they see their, I guess, evolution from year 1 to year 4 and all the new enemies coming out, people had a question of like, are they evolving? Are they actually learning? Are they doing something else? But then we have the whole Kai and Ria stories where the, you know, they're like the interlude chapters between some patches, kind of like their own ongoing Archon quest, but it's actually really, really important because we learned a long time ago that Heliotrolls have some really interesting history. And of course, that's one of the reasons why we chose a Heliotroll Learn Along today as our topic, because it's topical and it's a good time to remind everyone of exactly who we're fighting, and some really interesting lore implications of why we should or maybe why we shouldn't. So yeah, I just like that it's a good reminder that these characters are really ingrained into the entire story of the world. Really deep history, things that we really should be learning about. They give you more depth to each of the enemies that we fight. So I like it. It's different. It's not just always combat focused, although everyone loves the combat. I just like it's a nice change of pace for what people want to get out of this game. I like Genshin because it gives you so much of different content inside of it, rather than just one same thing over and over and over again. It's good diversity, good variety.
Yeah. So, you know, so in the vein of like, you know, oh, hey, remember the Heliotrolls? What's going on with them? We wanted to do with this Heliotroll lore learn along. Because, you know, we haven't done a lore learn along in a while, and why does my tongue feel weird saying we haven't done one in a while, and you know, it's always nice to revisit kind of like what's going on in Genshin and like what do we know. And Heliotrolls are huge, like hugely important. Obviously the last like different kind of Heliotroll we got was like those like the ones that look like kind of like ninjas,
the rogues.
the Heliotrolls rogues. And you know, since then, it's like we haven't really done anything in the story related to Heliotrolls. And funnily enough, on my NA account recently, I just played the Carrie Bear quest again.
Oh, and are you okay?
It just makes me feel bad for still everything. Like, yeah, it's a really sad thingy, but a really sad story. But all right, so let's get started. We're gonna talk about, you know, some of the things in the Heliotrolls here on the wiki. So on the you know, Genshin Impact fandom wiki, just the Heliotroll page. So let's go through some of these little things here, and Kahi and I will just take turns reading some of these things here. So I'll go first. Let me read the description. So the short overview description first is: Heliotrolls are a goblin-like family of monsters in Genshin Impact, and they're one of the first enemy family types the player will encounter early in the game. Okay, so the full description is: regardless of what stage of growth they are currently at, all Heliotrolls are bare-chested and barefooted, and have a large mane covering most of their head. They appear to have two elongated ears sticking out of their mane. The only clothing they wear is a loincloth, while their arms and legs are loosely wrapped in bandages. Every Heliotroll wears a mask, as to prevent themselves from seeing their own hideous faces in reflections. While elementally affiliated Heliotrolls, such as Samotrolls, Heliotroll Rogues, and Lolotrolls take on the color of their element, their skin is naturally of a grayish-black hue. Elementally affiliated Heliotrolls, Samotrolls, and Lolotrolls also take on the element's appropriate color for both their skin and masks, despite their general hostility towards outsiders or humans and a less than optimal lifestyle. Heliotrolls are also intelligent for their standards. As a few use tools and slimes, scavenge, and even engage in agriculture, albeit limited to raising livestock due to the race's general dislike of vegetables. They have a fairly impressive, albeit archaic, architectural style, the construction or purpose of them unknown. As a Heliotroll grows and survives, they eventually turn into Mitochirls. Mitochirls, who are larger and bulkier. Mitochirls that continue to grow and survive eventually accumulate an excess of the elemental energy in their area, turning them into Lolotrolls. It is not known how long it takes for this growth to occur. Some Heliotrolls may instead go rogue. Unlike other Heliotrolls, these rogues are not part of a tribe. Instead wandering around Teyvat for an unknown reason. However, they may occasionally help other Heliotroll tribes for a short time before leaving. These Heliotrolls are larger, being of similar height to a Mitochirl, and are also said to be intelligent for Heliotroll standards. They appear not to have an archon or god governing them, rather relying on the most strongest and ferocious among them to lead the tribe. Most tribes also have Samachrels who act as the spiritual leaders of the group. The Lalachrels, whose name is derived from a Hilichurlian way of respectfully addressing a king or ruler, are revered by younger Hilichurls due to their strength. Despite their status as a role model or king for the smaller hierarchy, most Lalachrels prefer solitude. Hilichurls appear to have a reliable social network, as some Hilichurls are friends with others across vast distances. Like humans, Hilichurls can live in a myriad of environments and acclimate themselves accordingly. Many Hilichurls are also affiliated with the Abyss Order, as the Abyss Mages are able to speak fluent Hilichurlian. Unlike humans, who usually have to rely on a vision or science to manipulate the elements, some Hilichurls are naturally capable of doing so, such as the Samachrels. Why or how is unknown. That said, Hilichurls typically stay away from areas with high elemental concentrations, as it places a great burden on their body. So just as a quick reminder, there's like a bunch of different types of Hilichurls. There's the physical kinds, the Hilichurl, Hilichurl shooter, unusual Hilichurl, which we see very occasionally. There's the Animo, Hilichurl rogue, Samachrurl. We have a bunch of different cryo ones like Grenadier, shooter, Samachrurl, guard, Lawchurl, Mitachurl. We have all of those versions for all the different elements as well. And, you know, who knows what we'll see in the future. So, Kahi, what about the tribes? Can you tell us about that?
Okay, so for tribes, while Hilichurls can be found all over Teyvat, some of them in small tribes, there are three prominent tribes, all of whom can be found in the Daupa Gorge. This is, I believe, in Mondstadt area, the first area that we ever encounter in Teyvat. A tribe's composition tends to vary, usually containing a large amount of normal Hilichurls, and most tribes also have Samachrurls, who are the oldest of the Hilichurls and often lead the tribes. Some tribes may not have a Samachrurl, which is the result of younger, stronger members overthrowing them. These tribes are most likely led by Mitachrurls, who are far more aggressive. Even fewer tribes are led by Lalachrurls. Every time I see Lalachrurls, I keep trying to pronounce it as Lalachrurls, because we're in Hawaii, that's how we pronounce W's a lot. So Lalachrurl is Lalachrurl to me. But as the few that are around prefer solitude and dislike the reverence the younger members give them. The Sleeper Tribe. Sleeper Tribe Hilichurls are known for, of course, napping whenever possible. Due to their emphasis on sleeping, the Sleeper Tribe is rumored to have extremely soft animal skin beds. Next one is Meaty Tribe. The Meaty Tribe Hilichurls are known for making sacrifices on a regular basis. They pray for meat every day and highly value strength. Apart from building huge altars, they possess a massive cooking pot and a huge arena for members of the tribe to spar. Then we have the Eclipse Tribe. The Hilichurls of the Eclipse Tribe are said to be extremely mysterious. All Hilichurls of that tribe know how to draw an eclipse symbol. It is rumored that the Dada Samachrurls of this tribe know the reasoning behind this. So if you're ever wondering why there's like certain camps that have like these big cooking pots or certain camps that don't, or wondering why there's this particular Samachrurl that's kind of like high above in a prominent position, that's kind of like the chief, or like the leader. So there actually are tribes. It's not just random groups. There's kind of intent to why they're set up like this. I'll be honest though, I didn't know there was a Sleeper Tribe. I thought they just slept. I thought everyone did that. So interesting that there's like specific tribes for those kinds of attributes. Okay. Now, getting into the lore. So this is where it gets into a deep dive. So under the lore, it says, it is heavily implied that Hilichurls were once human beings who were cursed by the gods for, quote, sinning. While the punishment of the gods could take many forms, such as immortality, this particular affliction is known as the, quote, curse of wilderness, which causes people to transform into monsters and grants them an unnaturally prolonged life. Given that the Hilichurl's existence has been known for over 1,000 years, it is likely they originate from the many ancient civilizations that once thrived on Teyvat before their eventual demise in various catastrophic events across Teyvat's history. In particular, their presence has increased since the cataclysm occurring 500 years ago. Hey, another 500 years ago event, right? Coinciding with the destruction of the ancient human civilization of Kyonria. In fact, Dainsleif confirms that the Hilichurls encountered in the chasm are actually former citizens of Kyonria. So it's heavily implied, but all but confirmed. And Clothar and Alberic further reveals that those who were not pure-blooded Kyonrians were the ones that turned into monsters. So, yeah, I mean, it's heavily implied that they're Hilichurls, but we can all assume that they were. There's a lot of evidence pointing at it. They referred to it by people who were there. Dainsleif is that long recurring, you know, character that is from Kyonria, and he is like the most, you know, deepest connection to that area. So I believe we can trust him when he says something about something that reminds him of that area. Okay, so due to the curse, memories of their former life are gradually forgotten, as well as most semblances of humanity they once had. Their intelligence and behavior are gradually degraded, and they can no longer speak nor understand the common language of Teyvat. Despite all this, Hilichurls seem to be capable of at least some rudimentary self-awareness and emotion. For example, they still recall what it was like to have a human face, as the reason they wear the masks to hide their true countenance is because they cannot stand the mental anguish of seeing their own hideous reflections in a body of water. Although most Hilichurls are incapable of human speech and intelligence, it is possible to reverse parts of the curse, such as when Caribear was able to speak again after being imbued with the power of the Abyss from the Statue of the Sinner. Moreover, in Fontaine, Narcissus and Kreutz was able to give an animal Hilichurl rogue sentience, granting him both a human form and the ability to speak and understand human language, giving him the name Caterpillar. Hilichurls are unable to truly die a natural death on account of their immortality. As they grow older, their physical bodies and mental state erode to the point that it is like death. Because of this, aged Hilichurls are in a state of perpetual agony. However, Hilichurls seem to know that they are cursed and are also somehow aware of the properties of an area in the chasm that can temporarily assuage the effects of their curse. Therefore, some Hilichurls instinctively venture to this region when they want to, quote, die. Ignoring all bodily needs of food or defense and desiring nothing else than to waste away with at least some semblance of comfort. Wow. Now, if that wasn't a good one. Yeah. What a bleak outlook. What a interesting, deep history and very sad history. So, a lot of things about this section. In summary, what you can take away from this one area is that they used to be human. So the Hilichurls, long time ago.
It's heavily implied that Hilichurls were once human. I know there are some people that theorize that some form of Hilichurl existed before the calamity and everything that happened. But you know, at this point, they've pretty much implied that Hilichurls are the cursed beings from Kyonria. The ones that we met are from Kyonria, the ones in the chasm. But were there Hilichurls that were just beings that were just humans cursed by gods in a different context, like before Kyonria, right? Like, what is that, right? And so we don't have that information yet.
So as far as like all this background lore. Hilichurls, they have been around for a long time, and longer than what most people think, because they were here for seemingly over 1,000 years. Now, humans could have turned into Hilichurls, or they could have been the first ones, but we don't really know the exact origin of Hilichurls themselves. There's never been an account of the first Hilichurl, or things like there were Hilichurls in Kyonria, and then they all turned into them as well. There's never been like that much of like a root, you know, lore bits or any kind of writing or documentation. So far, the oldest thing that we know about them is that they came from humans as put under the curse. I actually didn't know it was called the curse of wilderness, but this particular affliction, which causes people to transform into monsters and grants them unnaturally prolonged life. I don't know if there was an instance where there were other types of monsters that humans turned into. I do know that it is possible that they can, with, you know, we just had an event where we saw one of Xian Yuan's old friends and companions was that old lady that we met during her story quest, where she turned into a crane. It's not exactly a monster, but it is a known event where a human turned into an animal or a non-human. There's examples of non-humans out there, like we have the yokai in the Inazuma area. We have people who, you know, obviously go turn into hilichurls, but we have instances where people can turn into more like creature-like, but not full-on other creatures other than the adepti. Do you know of any other particular one where a human turned into an animal or into like a non-human thing? I'm sure there's a few.
Well, I know a non-human thing turning into a human, the Fontanian people.
Well, right, yeah, because they started off as like those hydro mimics or
the oceanids,
right?
Yeah.
But never the reverse way around. No. But anything is possible in this particular world. One thing that we still have yet to like do a deep dive on, or we haven't really explored it as much, I mean, it's probably going to be coming up soon with another region, but the Catslang people, the Catslang people, because Diona is, you know, a cat person. We have Kiraro is a cat person. We also have
right, well, Kiraro is a different kind of cat person.
Yokai, right?
She's like a Nekomata. She's a yokai. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's like particularly from Inazuma, but the Catslang people they're born with like...
I mean, there's also Klee and supposedly Alice. They're like kind of elfish.
Right.
They have like elf ears,
right.
You know what I mean?
What were they? Did they have a... Yeah. Did they have a race name? Did they have a name for that yet or no?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know.
But yeah, there's currently that one. And I know who else had that interesting... Oh, Sucrose.
I mean, Sucrose.
Sucrose has like those fluffy ears, but we don't know if that's because of an experiment.
And then there's the Adepti.
And the Adepti, of course. So there's always like a hybrid of people, animal, like, you know, with animalistic traits. But yeah, hilichurls are closer to humans than we think. Maybe they're just further down the line. As far as like the types, I think the most recent type of hilichurl that appeared was the hilichurl rogues. So we have the animal hilichurl rogue, and we have the hydro hilichurl rogue, and I think there's a cryo hilichurl. Is there? There's at least one more, or is there only two? Oh no, there aren't only those two. Yeah, these hilichurl rogues are a lot more powerful and have like a lot more abilities than the other ones. I think the Megatrol and the Mitatrol, those are like the biggest ones, are the brutish type, but the ones that seem to have more intelligence than all of them is either going to be the Sawatrols or Samatrols and the rogues, because they just... they possess more of an awareness and more of a conscience than the other ones. All right, so before we move on to some culture or some trivia at the end of this, was there something that you just got reminded of or something that you just learned from this bit? I did get some reminders and I learned one new thing, but what about you?
Well, I just did the Care Bear quest. And yeah, I guess I was reminded that like all the hilichurls kind of wear masks because they don't want to see their faces, when the way that they made it sound in the Care Bear quest is that like Clothar Albrecht like put the mask on so that he wouldn't see his face. That's kind of what it sounded like, but like I don't know, maybe it's just I don't know, like do hilichurls naturally make a mask and then put it on their face and all their masks happen to look the same, or like how does that work, you know what I mean? So yeah, just something that I thought about when you mentioned it this time. I was like, oh yeah, that's right, they like don't want to see their face, so like do they all just like happen to create the same mask, and then they all happen to speak Hilichurlian? So like that must be part of the curse, right? Like that they all speak the same language, because if you're a human who doesn't speak Hilichurlian and then you get cursed and you get turned into a Hilichurl, you suddenly speak Hilichurlian. That's part of the curse, right? So that's like, is part of the curse also knowing how to make the same looking mask across all the Hilichurl factions? Like, so interesting. So, you know, speaking of that, you know, getting into the culture, we see in this event, this Hilichurl event, how the Helichurls kind of just hang out in daily life when they're not fighting you. So, or they're not attacking Mondstadt or whatever it was. So, you know, so here in the wiki, they have some of the things here about daily life. So, architecture. Helichurls have been observed building structures for daily use, storage, and guard duties. Some structures are built using long-lasting techniques, quote-unquote. Structures are primarily made of wood and stone, with metal and cloth as needed or desired, and may feature decorative designs drawn or etched on cloth or stone. A long pole-like white material that tapers to a point on one end is often used. Though its composition is unknown, it appears flexible enough for shaping, yet rigid enough to support completed structures. This material is always covered with decorative designs. Helichurlian structures largely appear in simple and crude, but may be remarkably sturdy. They may even be specially treated, although how and by whom are both unknown. Helichurlian furnishings include Helichurlian-style buildings, as well as spiral watchtower, the straw hut, archery target, horned pot, Helichurl fence, and totem fence, which are all things you can put in your teapot. Now, activities. Helichurls have been observed patrolling, standing guard, practicing combat, dancing, staring into the distance at the edge of cliffs, staring at items of interest such as flaming flowers, relaxing, napping, mining, and watching other Helichurls. They may do so alone, in pairs, or in groups.
They sound just like humans. Dancing. Wow.
Oh my god, wow. Wow. Dancing. Helichurls may dance when they're happy. They may also dance around items of interest, such as the broken sundial near the Thousand Winds Temple, and foods such as bird eggs and lavender melons. Helichurls may also appear to watch fellow Helichurls who dance. Helichurls can also be observed dancing as conducted by an Abyss Mage. Food. Helichurls eat a large midday meal and also likely eat another meal before sleeping. Helichurls enjoy meat so much that the phrase in Helichurlian, Mosi Mita, is also an expression of happiness, and have been observed keeping forest boars in fenced-off areas, suggesting they may practice raising livestock. They do not enjoy eating vegetables, fruits, or other plants, and to the point that the phrase in Helichurlian, Mosi Gusha, is also an expression of sadness in Helichurlian. While Helichurls have not been observed practicing agriculture, they value seeds. Helichurls have been observed boiling water using flaming flowers. Religion and spirituality, little is known. That's all it says. Social relations. Helichurlian social structure is mostly understood through Jacob Musk's books, Helichurl Cultural Customs and Helichurl Ballad Selection. Most Helichurls live in tribes, such as the Midi Tribe, Sleepy Tribe, the Eclipse Tribe, and Dadopa Gorge. Some Helichurls, who are the oldest, and Law Helichurls, literally Chief Churl in Helichurlian, who are the strongest, have the highest social status. Law Helichurls prefer to be alone, though they may be followed by admirers. Some Helichurls lead tribes and may be ousted by Semichurls lead tribes and may be ousted by Mighty Churls, literally like good/meaty churls, who are stronger and more aggressive. Mighty Churls may also cause infighting. Helichurl rogues are not associated with any tribe and wander for reasons unknown, though some speculate that they are seeking a bygone splendor that once belonged to their people. They may occasionally assist a Helichurl group or tribe for a short time before continuing on their journey. Right. Helichurls communicate with other tribes and also have long-distance communication, and the vast majority of Helichurls are wary of humans and attack on sight, but some are willing to talk, which we know from Elon Musk, right? So, what about some of their designs, motifs, symbols, and technology, Kai?
Before I continue, when it said Helichurlian social structure is mostly understood through Jacob Musk's books, that's, I'm pretty sure, Elon Musk's dad. Elon Musk is one of the first NPCs we meet in Mondstadt when you go into the library. She's right at the bottom and she's studying, and as you can actually hear her talking and making the noises like Helichurlian. And she has a quest where you kind of follow her and protect her from the camps when she goes to talk to them. So that's when
It actually says that it's not necessarily her dad, but it's her ancestor.
Ancestor. Okay, I thought it was her dad.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we at? Designs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as far as designs, they're very iconic, very recognizable. Every Helichurl wears a mask as they fear potentially seeing their own reflections. Some masks have an insignia with a brown diamond, and others show their corresponding element. So I guess a visual indicator other than their color palette. Some technology they have, they likely rely on technology given to them, an example, only given orders to handle machinery. In addition to things in their environment, they do not appear to have had a notable technological innovation or era, or any kind of technological evolution. It's just been pretty primitive. They hail from the time of Kyanria, but still use primitive weapons. Slimes, however, these various types of slimes, cryo, pyro, and dendro slimes to manufacture exploding barrels. So those barrels that you see that have like a slime symbol on it, they were made by the Hilichurls. Cryo slimes are also used to keep food fresh, and large animal slimes are used to make vehicles for transporting food. The Grenadiers, Mitotrils, and Lawatrils, and Rogues are known to use slimes to assist them in battle, most notably the Rogues, because they actually just throw them right at you. Also the Mitotrils, they just kind of throw a pyro one every now and then. As far as like weaponry, observed weaponry ranges from wooden clubs and crossbows, those really annoying crossbows, and they don't do too much damage, but they just hit you from afar. I don't like that. To the Mitotrils axes and the Samotrils staves, and the Rogues projectiles and scythes. The use of axes suggests that Hilichurls possess at least basic smithing prowess, as the Mitotrils axes are far too large for any other intelligent species to wield. Crossbows are suspected to be provided by the Abyss Order. Hilichurls can utilize the elements to supplement attacks, but how they draw elemental energy is unknown. Okay, so I thought they did have like some particular like energy or weird way of controlling elemental power, but yeah, it's currently unknown how they get to do that. Right. There's animals that do that, you know, there's, you know, adepti that can do that, so like there's implications that a lot of like, you know, higher beings than humans can draw upon elemental energy, but humans I think are the only ones that really really need the visions to do that, whereas any other mm-hmm. non-human creature seems to have some kind of innate ability to control it to some degree. So like the more
including traveler,
so either the more monster like you become, the more in tune with the elements you are allowed to be, like the less human you are, the more adept with elemental energy it seems. But yeah, we don't know exactly how the Hilichurls are doing it, but the thing is, the Abyss Order is involved with them heavily, so there's a connection, there's implications, but there's still, you know, the game's ongoing. There's more lore being discovered. We're learning more about their culture as we speak now, like 4 years into the game. But yeah, there's still a lot of information regarding these enemies, but there's like language and some politics. Josh, did you want to finish up with that one? Talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So, real quick, language. Hilichurls communicate in Hilichurlian. There are no known cases of Hilichurls who do not know Hilichurlian. The only example of a Hilichurl able to communicate in another language is Cater. So, I don't know who that is. Let me click that. Oh, Caterpillar, also referred to as Cater, is the open world NPC that appears in this world quest, Game of the Rich, in the series Unfinished Comedy. I think he's like a Fontaine?
Yeah, it's Fontaine.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So that's spoilers for World Quest. I'm not going to go into that one right now, but we will eventually talk about that. Hilichurlian is an oral language. Okay, well, I'm going to skip that. I'm going to skip that part. I'm going to cut that part out. The only known example of a Hilichurl able to communicate in another language is a spoiler for a World Quest, so I'm not going to mention it right now. Hilichurlian is an oral language with no observed native writing system. The Latin alphabet is used by non-native speakers to write Hilichurlian. Yeah, like we write with Muhe, Muya, Via, or Yayika.
Yeah, so they don't write it, they just speak it. And there's no like parchment, yep. There's no documents or written form that they employ. Yeah. It's just all spoke.
And politics. Hilichurls are mostly hostile towards humans for reasons unknown. Some Hilichurl groups are affiliated with the Abyss Order, potentially partly due to both groups hailing from the fallen nation of Kain Rhea. Abyss mages are capable of understanding and speaking Hilichurlian and are able to convince the groups to assist them. Some Hilichurls, however, are hostile to the Abyss Order. The Conscious Hilichurl in Starfell Valley requested help defeating enemies consisting of Abyss mages and Hilichurl shooters. Interesting. So, yeah, so that's like that's pretty much everything here in the culture page. It seems like there's just so many interesting things, and this event really gives us insight. If you really like look at the event, like what the Hilichurl is doing, and just kind of hang out and see as you're floating around what the Hilichurls do in their free time, it's really interesting to think about it and how they have their own society. Now, I thought there was a couple of interesting trivia things here at the end, which are like, it is not confirmed who or what the Hilichurls from more than 500 years ago are. However, there is a frost-armed Lawatrul enemy on Dragonspine who is named Uko, suggesting that Kain Rhea is not the only destroyed civilization with people who turned into Hilichurls. It seems that Hilichurls have an affinity for remnants of the past, And after the fall of the city of Gurabad, which involved abyssal powers, its people were said to have been scattered amidst the world of darkness, left to become wild creatures who had lost their language and faces. This description shares some similarities with the behavior of Hilichurls. So, like I was saying earlier, there is reason to believe that not all the Hilichurls are Kyrian, but they may all be human, or they may all have once been human. So, blah. There is some little tidbits here about their inspiration from a Japanese Oni, like Japanese demons. Let's see, Hilichurls seem to recite poems or songs, according to Jacob Musk. They range from expressions of grief, festivity, and so on. The manga depicts beings resembling Hilichurls that existed during the time of Vanessa, though they are different in appearance compared to their present-day counterparts. For example, they're shown to have more colorful masks and be seen using traditional bows instead of the crossbows they now wield. Notably, there was also a kind of flying creature with bat-like wings that is not known to appear in any other media. Turns out none of the Hilichurl designs seen in the prologue appear afterwards. However, chapter 5 of the manga depicts Hilichurls in present day with amber. These Hilichurls have the same design used in game and official media, which means there may be older style Hilichurls that we will see in the future that were kind of previewed in the manga at a later, like hundreds of years earlier time.
Perhaps 500 years ago, you think?
I think it's actually sooner. It's actually like less than that, like 200, 300 years ago, whenever Vanessa... Mm-hmm. Went up.
Yeah, because Vanessa wasn't there at the Cataclysm, but she's there when during Mondstadt's formation.
Exactly. So, Vanessa, I think we did a thing on Vanessa mm-hmm. before.
Yep.
But her, let me see.
Oh, she came from a tribe of people before, and then she was like the one that was fighting against the aristocracy.
Yeah, in terms of timeline, I'm not 100% sure at this moment, but let's see. Yeah, I'm not sure of the timeline, but it is I believe it is sooner than 500 years ago. Now, yeah, so stuff like that are really interesting because we like Hilichurls, like we were saying, like we haven't really focused on them for a while now, but there is a lot of things that have been revealed kind of here and there that may show that we still have a lot to learn about Hilichurls and their place in Teyvat and the world, and there's just more to come. So here's the hoping that we learn more about them soon. This is kind of just a reminder for you guys, for us too, about what we know so far about Hilichurls, and this event kind of just made us think about that. So we hope you enjoyed this lore learn along. Hopefully you learned something. What did you learn? You know, let us know in the comments, in the description. It's going to be different from our weekly question, but what did you learn? What's something you forgot, something you didn't know before? Let us know. Now let's talk about our actual community discussion questions. So, community discussion question. All right, so last week's question was, what are you looking forward to the most in version 4.5? So, Kahi, what are you looking forward to the most?
Hanging out with Lisa. Haven't hung out nice. With Lisa in a while. So, yeah, it's going to be nice to hang out with her.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, Chiori. Of course, the events. Of course, all the stories. Of course, the primogens. But, Lisa.
I kind of actually... same in a way, but Jean, like I miss like kind of seeing what's going on with Jean. So I am excited for Chiori because she is going to be, it's perfect timing. I'm starting to work on my NA account, having this like DPS focus, like Geo characters, very unique compared to like so far since the characters have come out recently. Obviously Navi is a thing, but it'll just be a great addition to my NA account. So I am looking forward to using her there. Now let's look at what the community is saying. So from Discord, The Car Flew Away for Breakfast says, the cat event looks fun. Oh yeah, the cat event, where you can pet cats, that's fun. Hazre says, the absolute disaster that will be pulling for Chiori and Nouvellet in the same update. Also, I want more info about the new banner. Right, so for people who are going for Nouvellet as well, who want both characters, as always, tough. You really gotta like be lucky and or have saved a bunch up until this point. So best of luck. May all Chiori and Nuvalette Wanderer's Behavers. And let's see what's next. So Wanderer says, the new events, and I'm either saving for Wanderer C1 or Nuvalette C1 because I'm guaranteed, thanks to my failure, 87 pity to Mona on Xiao after getting 77 wishes in a week. But in summary, probably the Nuvalette rerun. Okay, well, good luck. Xiao says, definitely the new Chronicled Wish. Looks like a great way to get cons for characters or get a character which you really want, but Hoyoverse hates them. Eula. Also, it's another banner which I can hopefully get more lucky on than the limited banner. Yeah, good luck. Obviously, you know, even if you don't get the character you want, there you might get another character like Albedo or something like that. So, good luck. Salido says, if the new Chronicled Wish is a big hit, then they can do it again for Liyue and maybe have Yelan on it, and then everyone can have Yelan. Or cats. Cats are cool. Classic Salido. Rexlapisn't says, Chronicled Wish. I won't be pulling this time around, but I'm really excited about its format and looking forward to future iterations. I hope it comes back often. Okay, now that I've played nice and answered in the spirit of the question, I can give my honest answer. Being one patch closer to Arlecchino. Oh, man. Yeah, for reals. Arlecchino. Can't wait.
Okay, before I continue... Arlecchino, yep. Okay, the thing that's been on my mind is that I have, you know, we don't talk about leaks. I have never seen a leak at all about any of these new upcoming characters. I'm very concerned that Arlecchino isn't going to be a playable character, because I don't think there's any been official release. Because you remember the last time we saw like a Fatui character and we really, really wanted to pull for? You remember the last one that we saw? She just up and died.
Yeah, but you know,
3 years. I mean,
the last one we actually got was Scaramouche, right? Like, I mean, Scaramouche was technically one of the Harbingers. Like, you know,
it took a long time.
And even Child came out like out of nowhere. They're just like, you can have him. And we're like, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was weird. But like, we had Signora, yeah, who's been in the game for 3 years, and then she just leaves. We had I can't even remember his name anymore. But like, we had. I think Scaramouche was since year one, the first event in year one. But like, they've been in the game.
Yeah, we did meet him.
Since their appearance, there was like 3 years went by before they're playable. This is Arlecchino's first appearance. And I'm like, is it gonna be this patch or this expansion or like another 3 years from now? Like, I don't want to get my hopes up and like save and realize, oh wait, she's not gonna be here until like Shniznaya. So I hope she is arriving soon.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, right? So we'll have to see. We're gonna just hope for the best, okay, on this one. They did give us a lot of her character development, though. Signora was very like, here's this character, she's kind of evil, sort of. And then boom, she dies, like, without explaining any of it to us. Like, you have to like dig into the lore to find out more about her backstory, which is like really interesting. It's like, I wonder why they didn't give it to us. But we don't know. They've changed a lot of things that they've done at the beginning of the game, like the way that they do things. So hopefully all the development we've got about Arlecchino is a sign that we're gonna get her. We'll see. Whether it's gonna be now, whether it's gonna be later, no idea. But yeah, okay, so Kazu, I'm looking mostly forward to the new banner. Time has come for me to finally get Tainari's weapon. A thing I'm also very excited about is the new number generator. If you know, you know. Yep, this is Kazu's thing. I knew it. This is the first thing I thought of. Kazu kind of wants to, you know, keep it fresh. So when Kazu like is like, okay, well, what am I going to level today? Who am I going to play today? Who am I going to work on? Kazu has one of the people in the server just like pick a number. And Kazu has like a list of like characters and has the numbers are like swapped around. And so it's like, oh, you picked the number 13? Okay, today I'm going to work on Tainari, like that. So the number generator in game is going to be very useful for Kazu. Gil says, the closer the banner, I guess the more excited for Chiori. I love her aesthetic, but more importantly, I really like Geo as a niche for some reason. It doesn't really require much thinking or set rotation, just hit and go. Sure, yeah. Green Creeper says, I'm looking forward to Kazuha's rerun because I got Chi-Chi on his last rerun in summer. By the way, a very funny story, because the last primos I gathered for the wish I got my 5-star on were from Hu Tao's story quest. But other than that, I anticipate the cat event a lot, mainly because I love cats, but because of my family, I was never able to get one. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm allergic to cats, so I can't get one, and so I'm looking forward to the cat event, because cats are great. Pavo Noctua says, Chronicle Wish, D-Luke can't escape this time. Which is why it's there. That's there because for this exact reason, right? Tanari's oh, Fox with Wings says Tanari's bow on a banner. Finally, I'm also excited for the new Valette rerun in the cat event. The slime marble minigame also looks super cute. Nice. One small V says the addition of Chronicle Wish as a mechanic. I started in 3.3, so it's a massive boon to be able to look forward to more units, and it helps me save my wishes in case someone I want comes around. Exactly. Cloudy says another Mondstadt event since Albedo is one of my favorite characters, and I guess it means more opportunity to see him in an event again. True. Insignia says, we can pet the cats. I just want to pet the fluffy animals. And with Dahe and Chenyu Vale and now this, we're finally getting there and I'm so excited. Mad as a Hatter 19 says, I'm looking forward to finally getting Ito. I've been wanting him since his first rerun when I started playing again after a hiatus. However, I got Albedo and missed him. I'm also excited for the cat event and the Chronicle Wish. Nice. Okay, so that's a lot of people excited for the Chronicle Wish. I'm telling you, like, it's there for people, you know, for specific people who want specific things. It's not there for everybody. So, all right. So, Kahi, what about Spotify? What are they saying?
Before I begin, is there an actual, like, new expanded area that they...
No.
No, that's what I thought, because, like, the first comment was the new area to explore. I'm like, wait, I don't remember that.
No, no. Just ignore that
okay.
one.
Okay. So, first up, we have from the username, which is just the letter A. So, from A says, probably the story quest and the hangout, the story quest and the hangout event because I missed Fontaine. Oh, so A has to catch up on Fontaine. So, welcome aboard. Welcome to Genshin.
I forgot about the Lynette hangout event.
Lynette, that's the one. Next up, we have Certified Saint who says 4.6. I want some Purina constellations. Okay, well, some people are really, really looking forward to their favorite character coming back. Hey, Nouvellette is a fan favorite too, so you may want to roll for that one if you want. Next up, we have Sarah Klein who says new TCG cards, especially Nouvellette. See, a lot of people like Nouvellette. Also, might pull for Ito so I can give him Goro on a team. Yes, as a reminder, Ito and Chiori are in the same phase, but we have yet to confirm who is going to be the four stars on that banner. Last time Ito was here, Goro was on that banner too, right? Because there's like a thing where every time Ito shows up, there's like Goro is on it, just like how we have Raiden Shogun's banner always had Kujo Asara. Do you know if that's true or not? Because I'm pretty sure
it did. It always had. It was like she's meant to go with her, with Raiden Shogun. So.
Next up, we have from James, Chronicled Wish. I need more Klees. Yes, James, your favorite character ever, Klee. And then we have GamerCat22, who says, I think the new Wish system is absolutely fantastic, especially for new players who don't have many 5-star characters or weapons. Yeah, I do like the Chronicled Wish. I really, really do like how it's like a concentrated banner. You can pick a path. It is guaranteed. It's not going to let you fall into pity twice and then get your thing. It's a new banner refreshed specifically for, you know, classic characters. I hope they bring it up often, because they did not yet say how many times or what the cadence is for the release. But six characters to choose from is nice.
A lot of people say that thing that you said, like, it because it's all Mondstadt characters, like maybe they'll do a Liyue version and they'll just cycle the regions, and it would make a lot of sense if they did that, honestly. I think we could even get to a point where in the future we just have a banner for each region. It's like always up, like rotating, totally. Because like there's going to be so many characters in the future. But yeah, you see this, like everyone's like Chronicle Wish, but like this is like one of the most complained about things over the social media, because like people are just so hardcore about like how to get characters and like this and that and this, but like Chronicle Wish just existing means that people have a chance to get what they want, and that's totally fine for a lot of people. Like, you know, I get that it could be better in some ways, like it could be easier, it could be like less spending of resources, but it is a free-to-play game. They do give you stuff, and the game has a lot in it, so you know, like I feel like it's fine for now, and yes, I would love for it to improve in the future, but it's better than nothing, and that's it. It's better than nothing. Like you can't even disagree with that. Like it's literally better than nothing. So I'm glad people are looking forward to it. And I'm hoping that everybody who wants something from it gets what they want. Speaking of getting what they want and something, we're going to do one last wish. But before that, next week's question, would you like to introduce it, Kahi?
So, for the next week's question, since we're talking about, you know, Hilichurl, since we're talking about learning our enemies, since we're talking about, like, all these characters that we can play with, how about, what non-boss enemy would you want as a battle companion, and why? So imagine if you could just recruit one of these enemies that you find out in the world and just have them as your, you know, your buddy or your extra teammates. So not taking up a team slot, but, like, an extra summons, perhaps. What non-boss enemy would you want as a battle companion, and why?
Oh my god, can you imagine if we got a character that could do that?
Like capture, like, enemies out in the world?
Yeah, like Pokemon style.
Literally capture.
Like, or like, what if, like, Sandrone, like, you know, like, she, like, just takes, like, the... She, like, controls them like a puppet or something.
Would be interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, so let's head on to... oh, wait. All right, so make sure you answer that question in the comments on the on Spotify or in the Discord in the channel called Community Question. All right, so let's get in. All right, so let's move on to one last wish. Okay, Kahi, what are you going to be pulling for today?
Well, the available characters are either Zhao, Yaimiko, or the standard banner. Now, the cool thing is, I do have one free standard wish that I have yet to use, one Acquaint Fade, so I might as well use that up. I want to save my intertwines for later on. So I'll be pulling on the standard banner just to use it up. And here we go. Standard wish incoming, and it is blue, just like the Fade itself. Oh, what do you know? It's Black Tassel.
Speaking of Black Tassel.
Speaking of which, yeah. All right, you're up.
Okay, so for me, like I mentioned earlier, I have two of Yaimiko's weapon on my account. I don't have anybody to use it for. Don't know when someone will come out that I can use it for. I'm going to try to just pull one time on Yaimiko. If I happen to get her, great. If not, too bad, so sad. So, all right, let's try. And... one pull on Yaimiko. And it's blue. And it's blood-tainted greatsword. Alright, well, that's pretty much it. That wraps up the show for today. Anyways, thanks for listening, and if you have the time, please leave us a comment and a review. We'd really appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Follow us on Twitter, once again, at GenshinGuysPod, me at JSideGaming, twitch.tv/jside, and Kahi on YouTube and Twitter at Kahiao, Kahiyao. And as always,
Ad Astra Abyssos.
Hoshi to Shin o Mezase.
Enjoy.